The stranger sang a theme from someone else's dream. The leaves began to fall, and no one spoke at all. But I can't seem to recall when you came along.
I was in love once. We met in the band. She was a drummer. I played the clarinet. Back in those days, drummers didn't talk to clarinet players. They were seen as too dorky, too nerdy, too geeky. Drummers, of course, they were always the hipsters. I think I was the first one to break that unwritten rule. I wore my hair in a cut popularized by the Mohawk Indians. And she would come into rehearsals wearing t-shirts from old punk bands. At first, her friends in the drum line made fun of her for talking to me. Talking to the dorky clarinetist with the funny hair. It made her shy away from me. If she passed me in the halls with a friend, she would just look at me out of the corner of her eye and smile to herself. Or maybe that smile was for both of us. Either way, I held her smile close to my heart. It was as though we were from different sides of the tracks and were sharing an illicit affair, even if we were only friends then. We had a class together, besides the band classes, I mean. I forget now what the subject was, only that it was filled with the jocks and trendies that held the both of us in contempt. It was good to have a familiar face in the class that she could talk to. Together we made fun of those people who called us names for not being popular like them. We shared notes in class, and not just the ones from the teacher's lecture. I introduced her to the bands I liked to listen to, the Buzzcocks, the Jam, the Clash. She let me listen to her bands, the Exploited, the Sex Pistols, DRI. Even if outside of class, social status prevented us from talking, in class, we were the world to each other. I remember the first time she told me she loved me. We had been carrying on our secret friendship for most of the semester, hidden from the eyes of the drumline and the rest of the band. For the jocks, we were just band nerds who only talked to each other. But inside the band, we had to be careful not to cross that interminable line. It was at a competition. She was with her group of drumming friends, and I was with the friends I had made in the saxophone section. An argument broke out between the saxes and the drummers over, of all things, who got to sit in the back of the bus. The back of the bus was prime real estate, and the drummers claimed it was their divine right to be allowed to sit there. The sax players got there first, though, and had spread their things out like it was a Saturday picnic. During the argument, in which the horn players were forcibly removed from this section of the bus, she pulled my arm close to her and put her head next to mine. She was so close, I could feel her lips brushing against my ear. The sensation was, to my young body, extremely erotic, and at the same time, heavenly. "I love you," she said, before slowly letting go of my arm as a bass drummer pushed me away. She met my gaze briefly for a moment before putting her head down as though she were looking at her feet. I could see her looking at me out of the corner of her eye and saw the smile I treasured touch her lips. I briefly returned her smile before turning around and finding another seat on the bus. Then, the world changed. We graduated. No longer was she just a drummer and I a clarinetist. Now we were both college students trying to find our paths in life. By chance, we both got accepted into the same university, despite our drastically different majors. She went in to study medicine. She wanted to be a veterinarian. I chose to study English. In those first years in college, we tried to take as many general ed classes together as we could. It was wonderful. I took her to the zoo once. It was our first real date together. At least, I like to think it was our first date. We both had taken an anthropology class in the first semester of college, and part of the class requirements was to visit the zoo and do a paper on a few of the caged animals. We walked around the zoo, laughing, sharing ices and buying churros from the little vendor stands they had scattered throughout the meandering paths. We watched the monkeys throw their own feces at each other, and laughed thinking about how much it reminded us of the way we had acted in high school. The snake room was a darkened theater with giant aquariums housing hundreds of serpents. It was like a huge pet store where someone had turned out all the lights. I freaked out a little when we went inside. It was half on purpose. "I'm afraid of snakes," I told her, knowing that that was wholly, totally, and utterly untrue. I sent a silent prayer, hoping that she didn't remember the time that I had held her friend's snake. "You big sissy," she laughed back at me. She held my hand, and we went in together. Hooray for small victories. It was there we shared our first kiss. It was next to a display of a large anaconda from the Amazon. She was standing next to the glass, looking in at the snake, who had a body bigger than the diameter of my thigh at its largest point. I stood very close behind her, inhaling the fragrance from her shampoo, mixed with the sweet smell of her perfume. I'm not sure exactly how it happened or why. All I knew was, intoxicated by her aroma, I had to act. I waited for her to turn towards me when she had something to say about the gigantic serpent she was looking at. When she turned, her lips nearly brushed mine as she spoke. Her comment trailed off as she realized how close to her I was, and I didn't give her the chance to pull away. It took only an inch of movement, and I was pressing my lips against hers. I didn't know how to kiss a girl then, and I doubt she knew how to kiss back. But we stayed there lip-locked nonetheless. She turned her body toward me and put her arms around my neck. She pressed herself into me, and I could feel her body trembling. I took these things as a sign she wanted me to kiss her, and that I was doing it right. I began to kiss her stronger, more furiously. I felt our tongues touch between our parted lips. I kissed her harder, faster. I put my arms around her waist and tried to pull her closer to me. If I had had the ability to pull her inside me, I would have. I kissed her even harder, and she kissed me back just as hard. Locked in our passionate embrace, we were oblivious to everything around us. We were the only two people in the world. Then, the glass broke. She screamed as we both fell back into the snake's aquarium. He began to coil himself around us and squeezed. My desire of pulling her inside me suddenly seemed like a very real possibility. Our combined weight, together with the weight of the great snake, was too much for the aquarium. It collapsed, throwing all three of us to the ground, while the displays above the giant anaconda broke and fell. We were covered with gopher snakes, who wriggled about as the anaconda was squeezing the life from us. More of the display broke, and we were pelted with even more reptiles, including about 100 chameleons, who scampered about the scene the way a large group of people might behave inside an auditorium that had caught fire. The last thing I remember before I blacked out was the voice of a zookeeper shouting for someone to fetch a tranquilizer gun.
Take Welcome back. It's K-Rite Conservative Talk Radio, radio station that listens to you. On the phone we have Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, finally able to get him on the phone. He's been at a party celebrating after the inauguration at the governor's mansion. It's 2 hours late, but we finally got him. I want to welcome on the phone Governor Schwarzenegger. How are you today?
thank you. It's very good to be here. I feel a little lightheaded, but I made it in. We got back from the party. It was amazing. The most celebrities than you could shake a dead Jew at. You know.
Okay. All right. Hey.
just a little joke.
Yeah, the party's going well then.
Things are amazing.
All right. I wanted to ask you a question. Have you spoke with the ex governor Gray Davis since you were inaugurated as the new California governor? Have you talked to him?
I decided to lay the smack down, as they say, in some of the ghetto neighborhoods. You know, I wanted to make it known, you know, who exactly had replaced him, and you know, who this most incredible, properly pumped governor that you ever seen in your life. In fact, I told him that, you know, I didn't even need to come over and pommel him. I could just very easily send over my wife Maria, because, you know, I mean, She could just easily nail him into the ground like a railroad spike.
Right. Well, he's not the toughest guy that's ever served. I grant you that. How do you feel about the fact you've already reversed the 300% license fees? I thought that was really good. I thought
thank you very much.
We got a lot of support from people there. I also wonder what plans you have for the very near future. Any immediate plans you want to set up? That 300% license fee was wonderful. You get applause from me and everybody around these studios, I'll tell you that much.
Thank you very much. That's very kind of you. It's very nice to have so many supporters that are backing me behind everything that I'm trying to do, because I just want you to know, as your new California Fuhrer.
California Governor.
Thank you very much.
You said Fuhrer over there.
It's a little joke there. Sorry, the alcohol is starting to go to my head. Just want you to know that I have many plans for California and for Californians in general, and I have special camps that I'm going to be separating, you know, putting the improperly.
Hold on. You said you have a plan to establish camps?
Oh, yeah. They're not very big ones. It's nothing to worry about. I've also had plans to set up armbands for all of my staff members.
Okay. How about, what are your plans for handling illegal immigration problems that have been plaguing California during the Davis years? How do you plan on combating some of the damage done there?
Don't even get me started on these stupid illegal immigrants, Santa Cruz. God's sakes, it makes me sick.
I apologize.
I want them out. I can't stand it
anymore. Governor Schwarzenegger, we'll be right back. We've got to take a commercial break, but we'll be right back with Arnold Schwarzenegger, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, on K-Rite. Hold your horses. Don't change the radio. We'll be right back.
For years, PP Good & Co. has been there. We were there when no one else could hold the presidential DNA for Miss Lewinsky's party dress. Our products were on hand when Clarence Thomas proved Anita Hill was a dirty, filthy, lying whore. Who did the prosecution turn to when Kobe Bryant couldn't keep his prick in his pants to save his life? PP Good & Co., that's who. With products like Impolotrimin, the reinforced urine sampler cup, the Freebasers safety syringe, and the new Clinton model body fluid tube, we have paved the way for a safer, cleaner tomorrow. Whether body fluids are coming in or going out, you can be sure PP Good & Co. has the right product for you. PP Good & Co., your favorite body fluid store for over 10 years.
And now, Poo Poo Good & Co. for storing solids.
We didn't see each other for a while after the snake incident. Eventually, though, we couldn't stay away and soon returned to each other's arms. We rented Sid and Nancy once, and I snuck into her dorm room to watch it. We fancied that I was Sid Vicious, and she was Nancy Spungen. Occasionally, we would fill syringes with each other's blood and inject it into our own veins, as though it were the heroin Sid and Nancy shared with each other. We probably watched a total of 10 minutes of the movie before we were both overcome with passion for each other. I had to spend at least 10 minutes kissing her before I worked up the courage to unbutton her blouse. I had wanted to for years, and finally I made the attempt. And to my surprise, she made no effort to stop me. The next 10 minutes was spent trying to unhook her bra. Disconnecting the mechanism that holds those things together took a manual dexterity that was beyond me. After struggling with it for far too long, I finally just wrapped my fingers around it and pulled as hard as I could. She lost balance on her tenuous perch at the edge of the couch and fell. She slammed her shoulder into the side of the coffee table and spilled a large jug of grape soda that I had been drinking from all over her, the coffee table, and the floor. She laid there for a moment, half naked, staring at the mess I had created. I didn't let it ruin the moment. I pushed the table to the side and rolled off the couch on top of her. She moved her head to kiss me, but my momentum was moving me faster than she anticipated. Her front teeth smashed into my lips. They split, and warm blood trickled down my chin. She pushed me over and began pulling down my pants, while I tried to mop the blood off my lips. Unlike my ineptness, she had me totally undressed inside of 30 seconds. "Do you smell smoke?" she asked suddenly. It was then the fire alarm rang out. People outside began screaming. We could hear the thuds of their footsteps outside the door. Then they began banging on the door, and it caved in. Suddenly, these people were all over her room, running around, tearing things down, throwing rocks at the window. A few people pulled the couch out, sat down, and began running a commentary. They would say things to us like, "Nice body," and "Way to go, man." Smoke was pouring into the room, and we tried frantically to get to the fire escape. But the people in the room had formed a circle around us and wouldn't let us through. They treated it like it was a mosh pit, and every time we tried to get to the edge, they would push us back in. We were trapped.
Welcome back to K-Right Conservative Talk Radio, the radio station that listens to you. As you may know, we have Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger on the telephone.
Hello, everyone.
Very, very good.
Due to
a celebratory condition, I've been instructed by some of Governor Schwarzenegger's advisors to avoid anything that could be controversial or informative
in
nature.
Very hot in here right now.
But we still have time. Governor Schwarzenegger... bless us with a little bit more of his time, and I wanted to ask a few more questions of you. Again, we'll avoid anything controversial or informative.
Hey, that's what I'm here for. Go ahead and ask away.
Okay. Thank you, Governor. Basically, what is your favorite color?
Well, if I may be so bold, my favorite color was there's this really nice young girl at the party, and she had the best colored panties I'd ever seen in my life. They were this nice blue, and they had a little green with a little lace on the side. It was very erotic without being too slutty.
Okay.
And she, let me tell you, that she was something else. I would have shown her the little Terminator.
What would your Governor? What is your favorite color then? I'm avoiding anything informative or controversial.
Well, my favorite colors have always been red and black. But my favorite colors, I don't like the brown and I don't like the yellow, okay? Because there are too many people that are colored with all of these colors.
Governor, we have another question for you. We have another question for you.
Anymore. All right, there's not enough of it.
All righty.
Human sons of bitches.
As you know, we have Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger on the telephone.
There's not enough poison gas to be taking care of everyone.
Governor Schwarzenegger, do you have any...
Give me a gun. I want the gun right now.
Governor, do you have...
I can't deal with this anymore.
Do you have any plans of a new Terminator movie or any kind of movie while you're the governor? Do you have any plans on making a new movie in Hollywood or anywhere?
I was asked to do a movie with Steven Spielberg, but he's just such a stupid, dirty Jew that I didn't even feel...
All right, that's all the time we have. Thank you, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Thank you for the interview. Again, this is K-Wright, Conservative Talk Radio, the radio station that listens to you. We're going to be taking a break right about now.
All right, you need to set up the cops.
It wasn't long after the Dome fire that things soured. In fact, it was exactly 2 months later, March 16th, 1991. "I don't want to see you anymore," she said plainly. I couldn't believe it. I was crushed. "What do you mean you don't want to see me?" I asked. "What about all that we've built together? We were going to buy a house. We were going to have a pet snake named Kiss." "I've found someone else," she answered, looking at her feet like she had done when we were in high school. "They understand me. They know how to make me happy. And to be quite honest, they're better looking than me." "But we shared our blood," I replied. "Doesn't that count for something?" She gave me a look. A look that said, "Don't you know any better?" And it was over. I didn't see her again until the end of the school year. It was at the circus in the Hall of Mirrors. I saw her kissing someone out of view. I craned my neck, trying to get a look at him, but couldn't without walking right through them. The only glance I got was from the reflection of one of those curvy mirrors that makes you look taller. He looked small, almost like he was a member of a boy band. I got another glance at her lover in the big top. He came running out with the clowns. That was when it all became clear why he looked so strange in the Hall of Mirrors. He was a she, and she was a midget. Beneath the Layers is a 30-minute program on K-Squeeze, airing whenever it enters the playlist. Brought to you in part by PP Good & Co. Whether body fluids are coming in or going out, PP Good & Co. has the right product for you. Written by Jack Itis, Ace Facial, and Jeff Plamenig. Produced, edited, and mixed by me. I'm Jack Itis. Thanks for listening.